This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good welcome, Dr. Lou. Good morning.
Well, good morning to you. And I'll tell you what, a little chilly here, but nevertheless it's sunny, so we're all bright and shiny, ready to go Monday morning. So, Laurie, this morning, you know, there's a couple of things going on that I want to talk about before our guest comes on. And I've already gave you a quick announcement about who she is, and I'll go through that again. But I do think that, you know, you've got the 20th anniversary of, you know, the invasion of Iraq, okay, which has all sorts of political consequences. And I want to talk briefly about that. You have this whole bank crisis, which the conservative in our circle are concerned that the Democrats are going to take advantage of every crisis, as they always do. And what do they want to do? They want to try to give you this wonderful digital currency, which basically says you don't have your money. It's all controlled by the government. This is absurd, okay?
Very scary.
The other thing that I do want to talk about is, and this is something on the more positive side. You know, we've been talking about education a lot, okay? Baldwin County had an opportunity to adopt a K-3 textbook that was supported by all the liberals, and the State Board of Education was, you know, particularly interested in making this book called Amplify the text of choice. Well, it turns out that our Baldwin County group said no. They choose a book called Open Court, which is more traditional, less involved with LGBTQ stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about that before our guest comes on. Our guest today, as I said a little while ago, is Angela Shepherd. She spoke with us at our Alabama Conservative Coalition meeting 2 weeks ago. She's been part of the Mike Lindell election integrity movement. These national—it's really a national organization that goes state by state to examine election integrity issues in the state. And so she and Jason Sly were on Mike Lindell several months ago, and that's on YouTube. You can find it. So she's going to talk about election integrity from what she's, you know, been involved with down here in Alabama. And it was the number one issue for the Alabama Conservative Coalition, along with Common Sense Campaign. If the elections is not fair and square, then we're out. And you saw that in 2020. And I know that, you know, we get back to this whole question of, well, you know, 2020, you know, there was nothing wrong, and you know how the Democrats just treat us who question 2020 as just idiots. Well, unfortunately, as I've said to you all before, there's just too much evidence of tampering with the election systems in the states, particularly the states that matter. How do you get away from this? I mean, does 2,000 mules tell you something about what happened in Georgia? Does changing the constitutional, you know, approach to elections in Pennsylvania mean anything? So here again, we'll get into a good discussion with her. She'll be on at about 10:15, so we'll have a chance to talk. So let me just kind of quickly go through this 20-year anniversary of Iraq. My take on it is a little bit different than what you see today with Tucker Carlson and others in the conservative group, okay? I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that this is a softer, the contemporary conservative soft anti-war approach to Ukraine, I would argue, is wrong, and I've already said that, so I'm not going to debate that now. But the roots of a lot of what you have today. It's no different than what came out of Vietnam after the fall of Vietnam in 1975. Okay, the anti-war movement then was strong, powerful. It was all over the place. The anti-war movement had captured Congress, and they had cut off money and support to South Vietnam. That's the end of the story there. They own that, okay? And what they have done now, in my view, the left-wing anti-war movement, as far as Iraq went, you know, results in what? Obama pulling out in 2011. This is after all of the sacrifices, all of the success, and he just pulls out because the anti-war Democrats didn't want Iraq, and so he pulls out. And guess what you got? ISIS. Okay? I mean, everything that took place after Obama pulled out is a direct result of an anti-war ideological assault on the rest of us. So my sense of this here is that we have got to understand that there were sufficient reasons for especially the Senate to vote to go into Iraq. Hillary Clinton and John Kerry both did. Kerry did it before he did it, and you know that whole deal with him, you know, I voted for it before I voted against it or whatever. But the point is, it was like 78 senators voted for it. What polluted everything was the fact that in 2004 was a national election. And that's what John Kerry gravitated to, an anti-war position in order to win an election. He completely destroyed the unity that the country had over Iraq. And yes, there were difficulties in the initial stages of Iraq. I get all that. But in the end, we were able to prevail. But the legacy is a bitter legacy that is not, in my view, it's not quite on the same scale as the Vietnam anti-war movement's legacy. But it still is a problem. And as I said, Obama's pullout in 2011 led directly to the problems of ISIS that spread across the world. Now, Biden's pulling out of Afghanistan, is that a direct result of all of that same crap that they thought about in 2011 when Biden was the vice president? Well, I would say it's a pretty safe bet that was part of his rationale for getting out. And you can say, well, Bush was going to do that. Yeah, Bush was going to do it in a different way, and you know that. He was not going to go down the same road of just wholesale pull out, no matter what the facts on the ground said. Okay? So here again, this legacy is part and parcel of where we are today. And I think it's extremely destructive, but nevertheless, it is what it is. The other thing that I did want to talk about before Angela gets on is this crisis of the banks. Now, look, we've all seen Wonderful Life. We know what the bank, you know, a bank run looks like, okay? We've been through 2008. We know what that looks like, too. So the question is, at this point, will the Democrats, and thank God the House is not controlled by the Democrats, because they would put through everything that is on the wish list to nationalize, federalize the banking system and control it. And part and parcel of that control is this digital currency business. I'll talk more about that in a later show, but for right now, understand that we should be calling Jerry Carl, and I'll get this out on, you know, an email to the ACC and to our Common Sense folks. Calling up to our, in our case, Jerry Carl is our District 1 congressman, we need to call him. We need to make sure that he stands tall against anything that has to do with digital currency, okay? The other thing before Angela calls in that I want to talk about is this textbook requirement that the State Board of Education adopted Thursday, the 9th of March. Here again, the influence of the LGBTQ lobby is just beyond comprehension. And yet, I shouldn't be surprised, given all the things that we've seen in the educational, in the wokeness that's coming out of the education establishment. And if you think that the Alabama establishment in education is different than what you see on the national level, you're kidding yourself. These people have got to be stopped, and we've got to figure out a way, you know, in terms of re-educating our kids to a point where they're not being told that, and here again, this is part and parcel of the 1619 business, CRT. They have been fed so many lies for political purposes. This is what the Marxist left wants to do. They need to undermine the children, undermine their belief in the goodness of America. And you can say, well, we have our warts. Yeah, no kidding, we have our warts. But guess what? We have taken steps to alleviate the worst problems, to make the Declaration and the Constitution live up to their full meaning. And we've had this conversation before about CRT and 1619. Now, those things are based on lies. Just like the lie that started so much of this anti-police movement. You know, what happened in Ferguson with Michael Brown. That was a lie that policeman just shot him in cold blood. A lie that spread. So here again, we get into a situation where, you know, what's happening in our classrooms is something that we have to pay attention to. And thank goodness that we have folks in this state who are willing to fight this and to lay out a different vision for what we should be doing in schools. And I have to take note of the fact that the South Baldwin chapter of Common Sense Campaign has been leading the fight against these textbooks that we've seen, whether it was Studies Weekly or this it's amazing, this Amplify book that essentially was adopted by the school board, the state school board, 2 weeks ago. Now, how in the world does this happen? You know, it's a red state. Well, guess what? It seems to me that the governor ended up appointing an individual who was an LGBTQ supporter, who's a South Alabama professor. So you have this situation where we're just being sold out by the people at the top. And you wonder why we did not support Kay Ivey for governor. This is exactly one of the reasons why. So my sense of this is that this is another one of these fights that we have got to stay involved in. And thank goodness we have people around the state who are willing to do that. So, you know, as fights go, we're in a major fight over election integrity. And I'm glad to welcome, you know, my guest this morning, Angela Shepherd. Angela, thank you for coming on the line.
Thank you for having
me. Glad to have you. Okay.
I kind of have that. I can hear myself talking.
Okay.
You may hear an echo, but we're also getting a slight breakup in your call.
Okay. You want me to try to call back?
Say, do you want to just try to call back, Angela, see if you get a better line?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, dear. Okay. All right. So technical problems there, Laurie.
Cell phones.
You got to love
cell
it,
phones,
folks.
Yeah.
You got to love it. So we'll try it again. But here again, this question of election integrity, as I said at the beginning, is a national question. And so what I'm hoping to do today with Angela is to be able to tease out those things that Angela and her group have found that we need to hear about so that we can all get behind going forward.
And okay. For those who tuned in late, tell us again her relevance.
Angela Shepherd is our guest speaker. She's been involved with Mike Lindell's national election integrity movement, where Lindell has sponsored interviews with local activists from every state on the election integrity issue. So we're still trying to recover Angela.
She may be moving to a better location for a signal, as
could be.
Her phone was breaking up.
Hopefully I gave her the right number.
She has the right number.
Oh, she does. Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, you know, this. So this question of election integrity, as I mentioned to you. Oh, there she's calling in right now. Let's see what happens.
Angela? Okay, we're going to try this one more time. And Angela Shepherd, you are on the air.
Hello, Angela. We're trying it again.
I can still hear myself a little bit, but if it's okay with you guys, I guess I can try to...
Yes.
No, you're good. This is so much better. You're coming in loud and clear, okay? So Angela, yes. I was just giving a little background of what you've been doing with election integrity. Why don't you just spend a couple of minutes telling us, you know, who you are, where you're from, and what you've been doing with Mike Lindell and others in this election integrity issue, on this election integrity issue.
Okay. So we live in Lee County, and I really just got involved in election stuff after the 2020 election. We are from Georgia originally, and so obviously seeing all the stuff from over there, it was very disturbing, I guess. And
yeah.
So I was like, well, I guess I'll just see what really all this election stuff was about. And I started attending some groups in my county, and through that met a really good friend of mine who is one of our registrars, and I just sort of started talking to her about election stuff, and then she introduced me to now a friend of mine, Robert, who used to be our election official here in Lee County. And from there, I just sort of took off with election stuff and just trying to figure out the different processes here in Alabama. I mean, we do have some really good things that are in place, but there are some things that as I was digging and learning, that there are things that we desperately need to look into and to change. So
that's how
you
got involved with it. Yeah, and I think that's pretty much a standard approach that most people have. They see an issue, somehow get involved with it. And the fact that you've been involved with, Robert Garris from Lee County, you know, he gave one of the best talks I've heard in terms of dealing with, you know, the election problems that he saw as a Lee County supervisor of elections. So let's just take a moment to look at some of the issues that you're seeing. And again, let's frame this along the lines of, former Secretary of State Merrill, you know, had declared that Alabama was the gold standard in election integrity. And I think that, or in elections, and the fact that it seems to be, you know, self-evident that that's not quite the case. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, very much a fair statement. So,
yeah.
I don't know if some of your listeners might know or have heard about the fake ballots that I did here in Lee County, and then also that was down in Baldwin County that was done there. And so really after that happened and they realized that I had a video of that and things like that, it just, things really started taking off really quickly after last August.
Could you explain that a little further, fake ballots in Baldwin County?
Prior to every election, the counties hold a public testing for their machine equipment. And so in Lee County, I decided that I had a friend that was like, hey, I was filing for an absentee ballot because I was going to be a poll watcher. So my friend was like, why don't you copy that and see if it'll take your copy ballot at the public test? I'm like, oh, wow, that's a great idea. So then I told my other friend, Jason, down there in Baldwin County, and so we both did it. He did not have video of it, but he had audio. And so pretty much what I did is took my absentee ballot. I made 8 copies of it on just like flimsy copy paper. And then I fed it through the machines at the test, and it took every one of them.
Wow.
Yeah, and that happened here too. So this is, and once again, understand that the paper that is supposed to be used is very expensive. It's provided by the folks who run all of the machines.
ES&S.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're left wondering, okay, I can't go to the ATM machine or go buy a Coke if I put $1 in there that's not, you know, if it's counterfeit. I mean, it kicks it out. And yet we don't have a protection to make sure that false ballots are not, you know, kicked out. I mean, what was the explanation from the Lee County folks when you did that?
Very just dismissive. Just had not, like, didn't, there was actually an ES&S representative that day that was there. So he was like, my probate judge was like, well, go talk to him. And I'm like, okay. So then I go and I talk to him, and he kind of made it sound like that could never happen on election day because they would know at the end of the night that, or that people are watching the tabulators, right, as people are feeding their ballots through, which, you know, they have a case right now pending in Perry County where one of the commissioners actually got caught doing that, feeding an absentee ballot into a machine, or I don't know if it was copy ballots or just feeding the machine, because the machines don't know that those ballots have already gone through there. That's the other thing that's a huge problem. It just takes it. So you could actually just feed a ballot through, pull it from the bottom underneath that it falls down into, and then resend it, and it would not know.
Well, I mean, so there's one issue right there, okay? What are a couple of other things that you saw that made you think that this is not the gold standard that we have been told we had?
Well, through that process of me doing that with the ballots brought up another issue, which is ballot accounting certificates, which is what they fill out, the precinct inspectors, after the election that night. And so we put out kind of initiative across Alabama to kind of see what the counties were doing with those, if they were using them, because those are the ways that you could see, like, how many ballots you started out with that day, how many people signed into those poll pads that day, how many ballots were, provisional or whatever.
Okay,
and so, anyway, so we figured out just by doing that process alone through, like, 15 different counties throughout Alabama, that there are a lot of inaccuracies. Like, there's no, some people do them, some people don't. And so we had like one precinct here in our county that had 183 more ballots than the people that signed into those poll pads that day in that precinct. But there's no way to remedy that problem. And so what they end up doing, the inspectors typically just either say, I can't figure this out, or they'll try to force balance them and make something work. So, you know,
Well, Angela, I mean, when you say that there are 183 more ballots, I mean, when you pose that to the officials, how did they try to explain it?
Okay, I'll tell you this. Like, so I've gotten more traction over the last month with this than I did in the previous administration.
Right.
So this was presented in a court case in Montgomery back in August, which is still pending before the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court. But it wasn't until a state legislator, Debbie Wood, that was shown that video that things just started taking off really quickly, and it really bothered her because she only won her election, I think, back in 18 by like 9 votes or something like that.
Right.
So she just became an advocate and is just helping us now to really get us in front of the right people to hopefully be able to make the changes that are that we feel like necessary in this process. So
here we have the machines taking fake ballots. You've got 183 more ballots than people who were supposed to be there. Are there any other kind of discrepancies along those lines of, like, the voter registration? Are you finding that, you know, there's, you know, discrepancies along the lines of dead people voting? I mean, here again, the gold standard would imply that our records have been cleaned up. Those sorts of things don't happen. What's your sense of that? Have you gotten into that?
So just to be honest, I haven't really done a lot of the research as far as on the voter rolls. I mean, I have seen some of them, and I do know that is a huge problem. I haven't really gone down that road a lot. I've really kind of stayed more on these ballots and these machines and just trying to figure out the different areas where we really need to fix things, which the voter rolls are very important. I do agree with people on that. I do think they need to be cleaned up. I think getting out of Eric, I do think that was a really great thing that Wes has done so far,
right,
in his administration. But I guess I've focused more on the ballot accounting, the machines, the chain of custody, which we have no chain of custody.
Let's stop there for a second. Explain the chain of custody issue and why it's a problem.
The chain of custody is that, you know, there's no custody requirements or documents for ballots, the voting equipment, the electronic voting equipment, none of that. Alabama doesn't have a chain of custody requirement for those. So ballots are delivered to, like, the election officials. They're not documented. There's not, like, a, like, and so at the end, so when you take the ballots out of the ballot tabulators, out of those DS-200s, and you stick them in a box, you're just sticking them in a box, and you're sealing them up, and they're going to the probate judge. And so there's no who has the possession or who transfers that information. There's no documentation who has seen that or who touched those ballots to know for any sort of chain of custody. And so we are really more focused on trying to get things done that the Secretary of State could do administratively versus always having to go through the legislature, because we know that could be a long process. And so we're just trying to take a lot of these problems with solutions to the Secretary of State so that, you know, it can be more of an administrative process versus going through the legislature.
Okay, so let's assume now that, you know, the gold standard has been, you know, tarnished. We'll be nice about it, okay? So you've mentioned, you and I have talked about the fact that you had a meeting with the new Secretary of State, Wes Allen, and as you just said, there are things that he could do that do not require the legislature to get involved, which I completely agree would just hamper any kind of solution. So let's just take step by step the points you've made to Secretary of State Allen and let the audience you know, hear that and understand why it's important and what we can do to help you and your groups move forward with fixing the problems that we already know.
So first off, it was actually Secretary Allen's team that we met with. He wasn't able to be there, but we're still hoping that you know, that we'll be able to do that. I know several people have they keep putting my name in his ear to be able to meet with, so we hopefully, you know, will be able to do that. I realize that his team is important too, you know, because they do make a lot of decisions helping along the way. But our biggest, you know, thing that we're working on is the, you know, there's no audit of our results of our elections. So that again goes back to our problems with the ballot accounting for things like that, because if you can't audit and look at any of this, then how can you make amends for different things? And so we are trying, that is the legislative part that we are trying to get pushed, which is to somehow put together a audit, the results and audit procedures for them moving forward, because we are only one of six states that don't have a way to audit. Now, I will say this, Merrill signed a, he got a federal grant of $800,000 back in 2018 to do a pilot audit, which consisted of three counties, three precincts, and two races. And so I think it, I can't remember what the total was, maybe, I don't know, close like 1,800, maybe less than that, ballot total of those three counties that we audited. So right now we're in the process of trying to figure out how much money is left in that federal grant. Are we able to continue that pilot audit to continue to be able to audit more? Because I think that's what we, there's only 1,300 of those ballots actually. So you're talking about what, 1.5 million voters that voted in the general election and only 1,300 were audited.
Well, let me ask you this. When you brought that up with the Secretary of State's team, what did they say about that?
They're supposed to be getting back with us to let us know about that. And see, that's the thing with this is a process, and it's just trying to maneuver through this process in the right way, getting to the right people and staying on top of these people and having people that kind of come alongside of us. Legislators, that's what we're working on right now, is trying to really get some legislators to come alongside of us to work and help us to do this stuff as well. And so, you know, we're going at every angle we can, and we're just having to stay on top of them again. Like I said, it's just a process, and we're trying to get that, to figure out the money so then that we can kind of have a basis for what they would be looking at. You know what I mean? And how
sure.
much, because that's the first thing that everybody's going to say is it's just going to cost too much money. Well, I'm sorry, you know, so if we can figure out that, then maybe we can move forward to hopefully getting a bill passed somehow to do audits in this state.
So just
very needed.
To follow up on the legislative side of it, do you have a legislator in mind who will sponsor a bill? I'm assuming that you've got people who are drafting the bill. I mean, is Robert Garris looking at drafting it?
Yes, and we have Debbie Wood, who I said has kind of been like an amazing ally, honestly, for us in this, and just really helped us and is helping us. And then there's a new legislator, Rick Rain, from down in Houston County. So he's a freshman legislator, but after speaking to us and that kind of thing, he really is on board, and we're just trying to, like I said, it's unfortunately, you have to kind of play a little bit into this to get what we're trying to get, because we have to, it's just making the right moves and talking to the right people and making sure that we get it out and that we have credibility, because if we don't have credibility, people are going to just dismiss us and act and like we don't know what we're talking about. But
right.
And I guess that goes back to what you were saying about Robert and why he really is so great at this and so much better than I am explaining all of this, because I'm just kind of the boots on the ground, and but, you know, he definitely has a way of explaining it that makes it for, like, knowledge and to get out the understanding so the people can understand what's really going on.
Right. Well, you're doing a good job of that this morning, so don't sell yourself short, okay? Now, here, let's talk about another thing that you brought up with the team when you met with them. Did you talk to them about this whole problem of, you know, the possible link up to the internet that would allow for, you know, the kinds of manipulation that we've seen in other states? Did that issue come up?
We didn't really go into that very much, because mainly just because we feel like more like these look, I know there's probably lots of things that are going on in those computers, and I've gotten to know Clay Parikh very well. He's a very knowledgeable person in the cyber world, but we really stayed more on the tangible things things that I had seen and done, because I do know that they are probably manipulating, but I can't really go and prove that. So I really tried to stay on the things that I could be like, look, I worked 3 elections. I was in the absentee. I saw this and I saw that, and this is what the problems are.
Right.
So that was just kind of where I landed on this.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a macro issue that obviously we need to come to grips with. And, of course, the solution there that many people are talking about is, let's just go to paper ballots. So let's not worry about that issue right now. What other issues did you bring up to them, that something that Secretary of State Allen can do without going to the legislature that would help things?
Well, one of the big things that we have found, too, doing all of this, is that there's not uniformity in our elections in Alabama. And there's 67 counties, and they're all running 67 different elections. And I don't mean, like centralized and that kind of thing with elections, because some people kind of, you know, went kind of crazy when we said that. But it's more in just the uniform training of the elections.
Right.
Trying to make sure that the workers and the probate judges have the proper training and that they are all trained in this. Because it's, you know, like a lot of the like Jeff Elrod, who's now over the elections, is, you know, he's looking at, like, okay, who has the ballots, the machines, talking to ES&S, and all those things are great. But you've got to have other people, too, that are kind of on the back side of that are making sure those machines are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Are they doing what ES&S says they're doing? We're not just trusting that they're saying that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. And
right.
So I know that's kind of a little bit off of the uniformity, but I will say the uniformity is vital, honestly, because even when they did those pilot audits, there was 3 different counties that did 3 different ways of doing their pilot audit. I mean, yeah, their audit. And so it just kind of, there's got to be some way to bring them more in union with each other so that everybody knows what they're doing. And Robert likes to use this Chick-fil-A analogy, you know, like, and I think I might have said this in Montgomery a couple weeks ago, but, you know, the Chick-fil-A sandwich, when you get it in California, it's the same recipe as you get here in Alabama. It doesn't change. Now, the operators might run their Chick-fil-A's differently, but that Chick-fil-A sandwich recipe is the same, and it should be the same within our elections as well, because it allows for more problems when you don't have that. And there's less accuracy as well, because you can't just go and say, oh, well, this county did this, and go and recheck it, because that county might not have done it that way. Even in those valid accounting certificates, it's like, well, this is in the administrative code, but then some counties will do them and some counties will not. So.
You know what I find interesting, though? I had this conversation with former Secretary of State Merrill, and he made the point that Alabama had cleaned things up to the point where there was uniformity as compared to Georgia, which was just like the Wild West. They were all doing whatever they wanted to do. And yet it seems to me, from what you're saying and what you've been able to discover, that this uniformity question is quite real here in Alabama, too.
Yes, I think it is very much so. I mean, and it's, you know, again, it's real. The probate judges are over elections, right? And I definitely think that there needs to be more election either training for them or being held to more of an accountability for them as they run elections, and not just start getting and being in, you know, caring about elections like a week before, you know, or a month, I'm sorry, before right. elections, and then trying to run around like chickens with their heads cut off and throw in, you know, keys in people's mailboxes. There's no, I mean, you know what I'm saying? So there's just a lack of training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with most jobs, people have to keep up with, like, hours if they want to keep their law license, if they want to keep whatever. I mean, but in our elections, it's just like, oh, well, you can... We'll talk about it maybe once a year right before the elections, and then we're done. And I just don't think that's a smart way to run something. And now we've obviously seen after the crazy stuff of 2020 that you can't do that anymore. And that's what concerns me most about the 24 election, to be honest with you. If we don't clean some of this up and put some of this stuff into action before 24, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, let me just pursue that just a second. What when it comes to, say, ballot harvesting, we're hearing now that because the Democrats are so good at this, Republicans have got to start doing that too. So it's my understanding that ballot harvesting is not allowed in Alabama. Is that your understanding too?
Yes, it is not allowed in Alabama.
Okay.
Yes. So, but that doesn't mean it's not happening, because I know firsthand that I know that it is happening. I mean, but it's kind of like with the CRT. As a whole, in the state of Alabama, we're not going to teach CRT, but that doesn't right. mean that there's not going to be teachers that are kind of feeling that way, and they're going to teach our kids that. Do you know what I'm saying? So
right.
in the same way with ballot harvesting, yes, it's against the law, but does that mean people aren't doing it? Absolutely not, and you're correct about the Dems. They've already got their stuff in place. The
yeah.
Republicans are sleeping and still just like, oh, everything is fine. It's not a big deal. We're a red state. And I don't think it's because, I think it's really just because they don't want to mess with the system, because it's going to mess their system up too.
Yeah, exactly.
People've got to wake up, and we've got, the Republicans have really got to step up.
Well, you know, I certainly appreciate the fact that you were able to, you know, speak on this at the Welcome Back rally. But it obviously is going to take a considerable amount of time and energy to, you know, get the word out about what's going on with this. I mean, does Mike Lindell plan on doing anything more in Alabama? I know he had that lawsuit, which I think is still in the works, isn't it?
It's in the appeals of the state Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Here.
Okay. So that.
Here's what I found.
Say again?
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
So that sort of, you know, process is slow. Do you have any indication from the people who are working on it that that appeals process is going to be expedited so that we can sort some of this stuff out before 24?
You know, I'm really not. I've talked a couple different times with one of the lawyers, and I mean, it's just a waiting game.
Yeah.
I think someone actually might have said down in Montgomery that they thought something might happen by the end of this month, but I'm just really not sure. And Mike has just been really like all over the place and all the rest of the states. And I know he's still working really hard. I just, you know, but as
right.
far as Alabama right now, I mean, to me, he kind of set a fire to certain people, and, you know, as far as and putting people boots on the ground, because I think that's the most important thing in all of this, is that it's the people. The people here in the state of Alabama have got to step up themselves. It's great that the people that are all over the state, too, that can, you know, help lead the way, but it's up to us as to what we do with it ourselves in our state. And so I'm pushing for, people doing local, get involved, like your county commission, figure out what's going on, because your county commissioners, that's another thing I want to reiterate real quick, is that the county commissioners actually are the ones that vote on the machines that we vote on. They may not even realize it, and most of them do not. And it's been interesting going back into county meetings and commission meetings and realizing that a lot of them are not doing that. So it's very interesting. So there's so much more I could go down that rabbit hole, but I just encourage people to really start getting involved and
right.
locally and just trying to figure out where they can plug themselves in. So
just let me take you back to the county commissioners for just a second. Just go over that once again, their role in the machines. Tell me that again.
So the county commissioners actually vote on the equipment in which the counties vote on.
Okay.
Here in Baldwin County in Alabama.
I'm in Baldwin County does it. Every county commission is that is one of their
So that's not the Secretary of State's job.
Well, but here's the question is, though, if we decided here in Baldwin or in Lee County where you are to say no to ES&S or Dominion or anything else like that, this goes back to your uniformity problem. So that in theory, county commissioners, if they are awakened to the problem, could in theory deviate from what the state is doing?
Yes, but you're going to have to find people that are bold enough to do that, because that is stepping way outside of the box.
Right.
And, you know, and really going against, and then what would they use? And then, you know what I mean, so the whole issue, I think it's more just kind of keeping those county commissioners accountable and making them realize the roles that they really have.
All right. Well, that's certainly an interesting question to follow up on that we will do. But, Angela, I've kept you for a long time now, so I really appreciate your time and efforts with all that's going on with this, and certainly hope to be seeing you, you know, in the near future doing the kinds of things that are necessary to help you with this legislative action that's necessary and anything else that's necessary to get this meeting with Secretary of State Allen going and come to grips with the problems that are there and the solutions that are readily apparent from what you've said.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you, Dr. Liu, and allow me to come on here and share, you know. I mean, you know, it's just really getting the word out and for people to really understand this. So I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on.
Glad to, Angela. You take care. We'll be in touch. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, thank you.
Bye now. Well, I mean, election integrity. It's the bedrock issue in terms of what's going on. We've learned the lesson from 2020, maybe even, you know, the last election in 2022. Maybe not quite as flagrant, but questions about ballot harvesting, the manipulation of the machines. I mean, all of these kinds of things certainly lead to a conclusion here in Alabama. We're not the gold standard, you know? And if that's the case, we better get on the stick, because 2024 is going to be here. In fact, Jim Ziegler made the point at the Welcome Back rally that November 10th, now listen to this, Laurie, November 10th is when qualifying starts for the 2024 elections. That's, what is this? April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November. 8 months away. So his point was, we need to make certain that we're recruiting good candidates and have them ready to go for 2024. Now, I certainly think that Jim's absolutely right about that. But once again, we get back to finding the right candidate, and the big problem, getting enough money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this last go-round, we saw Angelo Fermo almost win in the North Baldwin district for the House. We saw Danielle Duggar almost win in the Daphne Spanish Fort area, that house number. And it's, I mean, we did find that we were able to support Johnny Hatcher in Mobile for a Board of Education seat that he won. We won another Baldwin in Baldwin County, a Board of Education with Rondi Kirby. So, I mean, it's not as though we can't see some progress being made on the election side, but it is a daunting task to confront and overcome an incumbent legislator who's got the money, got the backing, and, you know, you just have to fight for it, which we've done. But I think that Jim Ziegler is absolutely correct about trying to figure out ways to go forward and doing it early, which we'll start looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So as you listen to what we just said, you know, what are your thoughts about it? You've been in Baldwin County for a long time. You've seen elections. Were you surprised to hear that the machines took false ballots?
Very surprised, especially if we were to perhaps, and maybe we will, pull up some of your interview with Secretary of State John Merrill from last year, where he emphatically said that our machines could not be tampered with, that we didn't have anything to worry about in the state of Alabama.
Oh, yeah. The tampering that he's talking about, though, is the outside interference through the Internet.
Well, is that not tampering when you can put eight of the same ballot in a machine?
But you see, my recollection of Merrill's argument about the machines taking, you know, false ballots was that it comes back to cross-checking and trusting the people who are running the election. Well, I mean, that just falls on its face when you see what happened in Perry County, as which Angela mentioned. I was going to ask her about that, but Perry County is the problem child that gives voice to all the concerns we're talking about. A county commissioner was able to get ballots inserted into the system. He cheated. And, of course, Merrill makes the point that, well, we prosecute cheaters. Okay, fine. But how many prosecutions have not happened to people who did cheat and we don't know about it?
It does make you wonder. Maybe she got those eight ballots in the machine, she and her friend in Perry County, but when it came time to tabulation, they were spit out or not counted because they were duplicates. Are the machines capable of immediately recognition, or perhaps that comes later?
No. The recognition, if it went through, took it.
Okay.
And that happened here. Jason Sly and Carol Wilson did that here in Baldwin County.
I'm interviewing Baldwin County Commissioner Matt McKenzie Thursday at 8:20 on Community Contact, and I'm going to look into that, what she said, that commissioners vote on the machines. I'm thinking it's probably a formality that they vote approve the Secretary of State's decision,
they're
and that no one would dream of putting a bump in the system where one county is going to have one kind of machine while the whole state has another. But I'll ask about that.
See, the problem that we're really facing in part is political inertia, okay? Wes Allen promised that he would do certain things, and so now he's January, February, March. He's been in 3 months. So he's had the 100-day honeymoon period, okay? I had written to him and basically said, don't let too much time elapse before you start getting to your promises that you made that you were going to make happen.
Who's Wes Allen?
Wes Allen is the new Secretary of State.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And he's a good guy, okay? I'm not a problem with him. He says the right things, and like Angela said, he got rid of Eric. So that was a good start. But now the follow-up is what's critical, because if he waits too long, it's going to be very difficult to make anything happen. Okay. So, all right, folks. Laurie's giving me the wrap it up sign here. So
it is 11 o'clock.
It's 11 o'clock. But I had 30 seconds extra, I thought. But nevertheless, you see, she says one thing and does another. Look out.
It's 19 seconds.
Okay, 19 seconds. Okay. All right, folks. Wow, really appreciate Angela coming on. Appreciate your listening. Have a great week and take care. Bye-bye.
Very interesting. Good show. Thank you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi. If you missed part of the program and you want to listen later, we will have it posted at WABF1480.com. This program is paid for by an anonymous sponsor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash. WABF is now resuming regular programming. Stop with a she